Welcome to Galactic Water Cooler, podcast number 10. Today is Friday, October 13th, 2006. Yes, it is Friday the 13th. We do not discuss spoilers here on Galactic Water Cooler. We do, however, discuss the show's entire canon up to and including the most recently broadcast episode, which in this case was Exodus.
Movement of the people.
Exactly. We also discuss some material from sci-fi.com and such. We do avoid spoilers as much as possible. We have a call-in number as well. You can give us a call if you hear something in this podcast that you would like to respond to verbally. Our number is 214-296-9229. That's 214-296-9229. And you can also check out galacticawatercooler.com, which is our website, which also is a blog. We post between podcasts sometimes, and comments are enabled there, and there are always some very, very insightful comments. So if you haven't already had your fill of Galactica after this hour's worth of podcast, check out galacticawatercooler.com.
There is no fill. You can't have your fill of Galactica.
Hey, you know, it can happen.
Okay.
You know, like after the webisodes. Anyway, my name is Chuck Cage. I'm here with the heckler, Audra Heslett.
Hola.
And with Sean O'Hara.
Greetings, programs.
And we just watched this pretty cool episode. Sean liked it a lot, I know.
Oh, man. This is probably my favorite this season out of the two, you know, but
well,
still.
Well, three technically,
but it's still probably one of my favorites just because Ellen Tai got busted. I am so happy with that.
You're not going to be happy till Ellen Tai gets a bullet.
Oh, at least in the leg.
It's my favorite episode so far because Ellen Tai apparently has herpes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I remember when we saw that in the first episode, we were like, you know, that mark
rash
on her face.
Yeah,
and we were like, I wonder if that's just like, you know, smeared makeup or something. I mean, she was getting it on with Cavill, you know. And then today, quite clearly, she's got something happening.
I don't know if she got hit there or something. It looks more like a skin irritation, or maybe she got one of the Cylon STDs or something. Actually, when Baltar started talking about how hygiene was going to be the key, I was like, oh, this is it. And my mind sort of raced forward. I'm like, this is it. There's going to be some sort of like Cylon STD that's going to swoop through and everyone's going to get these rashes. And then they're going to have the cure, and then they're going to like make humans do something in order to
and
get the cure.
And it's all going
to
happen in the next, I don't know, 30 seconds, because the name of the episode is Exodus.
Yeah, but nobody went anywhere. You
know? Well, yeah, but I mean, we got the feeling that something was getting ready to happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're coming down on the planet. They're already leaving. They're packing up. Chief isn't even going home. He's just standing by the trucks like, all right, we're going to chill here.
Chief shaved his beard.
Yeah, well, you know, he had to.
Aaron's got to be loving that. Mr. Douglas, excuse me, must be absolutely loving that, because, I mean, that beard has got to be itchy as hell.
He had the full-on soup catcher, too. I mean, just
I know. I did that one time. You know, I grew this huge beard because I just wanted to see what it felt
They'd
like.
Take you and
it's itchy.
And a half.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't shave that day. Man, it itched. Oh, it itched.
Well, it made
all
him look
time.
A lot older, too, because it had like some gray grizzle in it. And when he shaves, he looks so much younger. I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
It takes 10 years right off, but I'm sure he shaved in anticipation of Galactica coming back, you know. Everyone's like getting back into fighting form,
oh,
except
yeah.
Lee.
Except Lee, it's just like, I gotta go.
I don't know if we said this in the first in the last podcast, you know, discussing the season premiere, because there was so much to talk about, but, you know, that was one of those Battlestar Galactica moments, those moments where it just grabs you, was, you know, when the message came through and was like, have hope. You know, we'll return for you.
That was the most awesome thing ever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there were some
that was one
big
of my
moments,
favorite moments,
but yeah. I don't know if ever, but it was certainly man.
That was like one of the tight ones, you know.
I feel kind of bad because in tonight's episode, we have the scene between Lee and his father, and it's supposed to be this really moving scene. And I'm not trying to be juvenile,
but
honestly, I kept looking at the fat suit, and it was kind of distracting. I mean,
I had to purposefully focus to get rid of it. I mean, I really feel for Jamie Bamber doing this. I mean, he's got to be, you know, to be able to pull off a scene like that. And I think he did. I just want to, you know, I know it was distracting, but it still got me. You know? And the scenes, you know, the one-on-one scenes between, you know, Lee and his father are some of the most touching scenes for me anyway. And that one did it for me. But the fat suit, I had to purposefully
concentrate on a Adama. Yeah.
And you almost wonder, you know, up until now, the fat suit has really served a purpose. It's kind of been, you know, an indication of the kind of things that have happened before. And it kind of helped us to remember how long it's been. But man, there was a price paid in that scene. You know, it could have had even more. It could have been more gripping if it hadn't been for the fat suit. He was really working around it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it was a little awkward. Not in the face. The face looked great, but the body part of it.
I don't know. I have trouble with his face, too. I mean, he has a very very strong, cold eyes. And there's something about the way that the makeup changes the shape of his face that makes it seem unnatural. You know, it's so not him that it's just very hard for him to emote while wearing it. And he's doing a fine, incredible job. I mean, I just felt really bad. I wish they could have just, you know, I wish I could have wished away the fat suit for that scene at least.
Yeah, the suit actually doesn't bother me. I think the face bothers me more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean the whole thing. You know?
I mean, because actually, if you look, he alters the way he walks and moves and touches things and everything.
Yeah, do you see him climbing up on the raptor?
Exactly. He's like,
he looked like me climbing up on the raptor. I mean, for those of you at home, I'm not a small guy, you know, and that would be me climbing on the raptor.
Compared to Lee, you are.
Right now, man. Yeah, the roll Lee up there.
Oh, my. Oh,
poor
my.
Lee.
Yeah.
He'll be fine in, like, the next couple episodes.
God, I hope so.
He'll hit the gym.
I hope
and
so.
D will be like, you know, here pretty soon. It'll be fine.
I love the fact that D is there for him anyway. She's not, you know, I don't think she's turned off by the weight. I think she's...
No, and she even said she wasn't.
I think she's turned off by what's in him that made him gain the weight.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but even then, she's still with him, and that's pretty cool. Wow, I didn't realize that I shut everyone down.
No. I think we were all just thinking, yeah, that was pretty cool.
Actually,
forgot. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was on the...
No one can see our faces.
Yeah, I was on the D is looking hot track, so I've learned not
That's
to
an
say
easy
anything.
Track. That's an easy track. That's an easy track to get on.
So, you want to talk about Ellen Tye again?
Oh, yeah.
Because
let's talk about Ellen.
Man, the look of betrayal on the Colonel's
God,
face was just
face.
Awesome. It was like, oh man, this whole thing, I've been trying to beat out traitors and beat out everything. And then I turn around and you know, you could see that just look in his eye, like that horror, betrayal and anger all at the same time.
Man, you know, we talked about in the last podcast, we talked about what a great actor he is. And I know we should be focusing on the story here, but that was incredible.
Yeah.
You know, his work in that scene was incredible.
He didn't
it was
even
all
sing.
In his eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. He just looked around. Like,
or his eye.
His eye.
One eye. It's true, though.
He's got more acting skills in his pupil than most people have in their entire body.
That was incredible. So anyway,
I was trying to figure out when he was looking at her and his I don't know, his eyes seemed to cloud over or something. And he looked, or his eye, he looked so... I don't know. I was trying to figure
so
out
so many things at once.
Yeah.
I think he looked incredibly disappointed. I think he was angry. I think he was concerned because he realized what this was going to mean for her and him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to figure out how much of it had to do with her betraying them in the resistance and how much of it had to do with her doing these things with Brother Cavill. You know, I think he figured
you know
that
what?
Out.
I honestly don't think that was a big deal. I think it bothers him, but you know,
he's had plenty of time to work before. Oh, you can go cat around with everybody, you know.
Well, and he's kidding, but
yeah, but he knows that kind of
he's
thing.
He's been
he
through
knows
this
that
before.
That.
Yeah, he knows that she's wired that way, but I don't think he knew that she was wired that or that she could be used in that way by the Cylons. I think that's really going to hurt him.
You know, maybe, but honestly,
that's a good point.
I think that the big thing here is that. You know how Ty is. You know how he.
Yeah.
You know how he rolls when it comes to the concept of a collaborator.
Yeah, black
even
and white.
It's an, yeah, even if it's accidental or if it's a little this way or that, you know, he's black and white with it, and she is now in the black area.
Yep.
And he was confronting in that moment. He was confronting, you know, his wife that he loves. I mean, all of a sudden being a collaborator, and he's going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I just realized what I said was wrong. I was going to say he acted defensive of her, but that's only before they showed the map.
Right. Once the map came out, it was he. What did he say? He was like he told him to put the map away.
Well, he you mean after he showed it to him?
Yeah.
Well, no, he took the map. He took it because it was, I guess, just because he wanted it, you know, out of his eyesight. But he knew it was at least the undisputable proof of her betrayal of them. Yeah. So, I mean, that kind of thing, just, I don't think he's going to be able to forgive. I really don't.
I don't either. I suspect that her character may well die.
I don't think she'll die. Actually, I think it'll change.
Really?
Yeah.
I hope she doesn't, because honestly, as fun as it would be to see that particular character get her comeuppance all at once, she's a great character.
Yeah,
and you really don't want to see her go away. And
oh, I don't think she'll go away. I think it'll be sort of like she'll have the same skills, but it'll sort of be like...
like the twist and the swirl.
The swirl.
Yeah, she'll still have all that. But I mean, I think it'll be like John Hammond from Jurassic Park, you know, where he's just made this
That's funny.
Huge mistake and he's really going to pay for it. But, you know, he's still the same dude, but it's kind of coming
That's
from
great.
A different angle now.
There's an analogy I just would not have pulled. That's awesome.
Ellen Dye and John Hammond from Jurassic Park.
You know, like in the second one. You know,
That's awesome.
I mean, he becomes this big philanthropist, and he's now.
But doesn't he go back and do the same thing again?
No, that's his kid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, his kid. You know, because you know, Ian turns to him and he's like, "Now you're John Hammond." After he left the Tyrannosaurus in New York and pumped him full of drugs and everything.
The idiot mistakes of the father are passed to the son.
Hey, you know, one thing that was just totally missing from this episode was Jammer. Jammer is cold busted.
No, well, we saw him. I mean,
he pulled off his mask, and then we didn't see him, and then we see them having completely taken over.
He ran off,
and we see the guy. Yeah, so he must have run away.
Yeah, he's seriously boned. Somebody eyeballed him.
Do you think? You know what's going to happen here? Okay, so he had to have run away because they had all the other guys up against the thing.
Yeah,
and you know what they're going to do with them?
Oh yeah.
And then you had the. We saw him take his mask off. So.
You know,
I wonder if he's with Callie. No, because
no,
the chief
she's standing with Chief.
Oh, yeah, right.
I think that Callie might have recognized him because with his mask on, I recognized his voice. Callie certainly would.
Yeah.
And his eyes.
But you know, he's out there in the wilderness somewhere between these many groups of people doing bad things out in the woods. And
either side might kill him at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he's
Look
pretty
what he's
much
wearing.
Every he's pretty much everybody's enemy.
He's like Gaius
you gotta
right now.
You got to kind of feel sorry
Not
for
quite.
Him at this point. Who were the two? They said two skin jobs. And I think it was Hilo and Sharon's group that pointed out. They said two skin jobs.
Hilo?
But not Hilo.
Anders.
I'm sorry. Anders. Right,
yeah,
right,
okay,
right.
Cool.
I was thinking.
Cool.
Yeah, Anders and Sharon's group, they pointed out two people that they called skin jobs, but I couldn't see them.
Well, we knew
Did
that one
else?
Of them was a Cavil.
Yeah,
we don't
one
know
of them
who the
a
other one
was. I'm not sure who the other one was,
okay.
But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I like the way what's it called? When the bullet heads, do they call them bullet heads?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of
I
cool.
guess Toaster is getting a bit old.
Yeah, now they're bullet heads. So, yeah. But I guess that's a specific model of Toaster.
Toaster.
Novelty condom head.
Yeah, exactly. A little red dwarf reference there for the people who didn't get it. But
they have the bullet heads, and then they do that 1 hour earlier thing and then run them up through the deal. And
right.
You realize that the shooting you actually heard was...
Oh, I just got to say, and I don't mean to get off topic here, but was that not awesome when Ty just was like, get it together. She's not any good to you if you're, you know, if she
no,
might
you
as
can't
well.
Do her any good if you get captured.
Yeah, not just that. What he was like, if you don't pull yourself together, she's going to die. And just the way he said it was awesome. You're like, Ty is quickly becoming one of my favorite characters, period.
Well, you find out why Adama doesn't have faith in anybody for no reason.
Yeah.
You find out why Adama sticks with the Colonel. Because obviously he's been through this before.
Not
with the
just
Colonel.
Because it's his buddy.
No, because he's capable of doing these kind of command decisions and keeping his head when all about you is you know, fracked and
especially
not good. Yeah.
When
and,
all about
and he
you.
Is fine. He may be the only one in the room that's cold, hard thinking, but he's, and it may not be what you want to hear.
He told the chief exactly what the chief needed to hear though.
Yeah. The last thing your son wants is to have Ellen and me as parents.
Isn't that awesome?
That took
though?
Me a second. I was like, whoa.
One thing that you see, I think there, and we've seen a couple of times since they've been on New Caprica is these deepening relationships, though. We know for a fact that even though Starbuck and Ty were apart and were, you know, at the beginning had this rough relationship, which we talked about a lot in the early podcasts. And now, even, you know, in Lay Down Your Burdens Part 2, we saw them really coming together, you know. And not in the premiere episode, you know, was it in the premiere episode when you said when they said what about Starbuck?
Yes.
He asked her,
yeah,
you know, and you could just see the concern on his face. He cares a lot about her, and now we find that you know, even though the chief and he had problems in the past, I mean, you remember in the miniseries, of course.
Oh, sure, you know? Yeah, they had huge issues.
Now, I mean, it's clear that sentence, you know, your child doesn't need, you know, Ellen and I as its parents.
That was almost Ty humor right there.
Well, no, but it was like, wow, you get the feeling that he means that. He's not kidding around. I mean, if something happened to the chief, he would raise that kid like it was his own.
Yeah,
and that was really heartfelt and sad and amazing.
Yeah, just many cool things. Like, I'm sorry.
You know what else I like about Ty is the fact that he has not given up faith. He's been tortured, literally tortured, and a lot of other people gave up that someone was going to come and help, and never once did he give up believing that Mm-mm. Adama was going to come back for them. And I think that's really cool, strong character trait.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of the sum up of Ty. They've really kind of deepened him and made him, you know, kind of show, like I said, they kind of show you why Adama has faith in him. You know, he's just this strong dude who's good in a fight. He's good in a bad situation. He has some personal home life problems, but he's dependable when everything's just down.
But, you know, those home life problems are getting ready to change.
Oh, man.
Now, I mean, I'm not, you notice I didn't say go away.
No.
But they're getting ready to change.
Well, he at least has ammo to shoot back, you know, like, well, you didn't take, you know, you didn't clean this, you didn't do the dishes. Well, you betrayed our people, you know, I mean.
Well, I think it's bigger than that. I think something really big is getting ready to go down. I think you're right, Audra. She's not going away.
No, Sean said that.
No, I don't think she's going away.
Yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. But I
agree too for what it's.
I like. Suspect something big is getting ready to happen. Like they may not be together afterward.
Oh, I think he's going to have huge problems with us. Huge problems.
Yeah.
You know what's really sad is that I think that Ellen really does love her husband.
I agree.
A lot.
Yeah, she just
in her messed up way. Yeah.
I hate to say this, but another big thing that I'm sorry to interrupt you, Audra, that another big thing that I'm getting from season 3 is a lot of empathy with all the characters. I felt sorry for Gaius. I'm sorry, but I did. I felt sorry for Gaius this whole time.
I felt sorry for Jammer.
Jammer is just screwed.
I don't feel sorry for Jammer. I still don't feel sorry for Jammer.
I even feel a little sorry for Deanna Beers, number 3.
Actually, I do feel sorry for her because she's having big problems with, you know, she's been led to question who she is and what she's doing and why she's, I mean, she's been down on that planet. She's been exposed to humans for a little while.
Exposed?
Yeah.
To humans.
Exactly. Well, think about it. That's basically what it is. I mean,
it's like they're it's like the humans are their little playthings. It's like they're playing house or something.
It's exactly what it's like.
You know, you really got that when Gaius was reading or talking to, you know, Caprica 6, I would assume, about he says one of the what's his last name? Aaron?
Doral.
Oh yeah, one of the Dorals was telling me how sanitation is really the, you know, the key, that if they just had enough toilet paper, they could properly wipe their bums.
That was crazy.
It would mean an uptick in the polls, you know? And you just get the feeling that he's not kidding. I mean, of all the people, who, you know, he has a very unique view of this whole occupation. I mean, it's easy to see him. Yeah. You know, at the beginning, it was easy to see him as the bastard that put them there. And he is still, but now you see him as this person who's looking at it from this standpoint of he realizes, you know, how screwed up the Cylons are. I think most people tend to think the Cylons have this big plan and they're doing some big thing.
And really they have a marketing team sitting around going, what do you think? Toilet paper? Toilet paper? Yeah, sure.
You know,
we agree.
He's like, this is
well,
so
most
pointless.
Of us anyway.
You know, and of course we had the big setup this time where Aaron Doral, you know, just suggested, hey, let's just nuke the place. I mean, what happens then? I mean, that was obviously a big setup to put that in Baltar's head. And in the preview, we kind of got a feeling that he was going to use that, you know, that was going to
either as a mechanism or some kind, he was actually going to do it.
Right, when we saw that in the trailer last week, you know, talking about genocide of the Cylons being an option, I wonder if they're going to consider nuking the Cylons, nuking the planet, but after they leave.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, but I wonder if that would work, though, since we know there are going to be some base stars.
Yeah, I don't know if that would work. But the what's interesting, too, is they talked about resources. You know, that's never been really a concern for them before.
Yeah, you know, we talked about that back in early podcasts,
yeah, we have, but, I mean, they haven't. They haven't mentioned that they've ever been low or they've had problems or they've had supply chain issues or anything. Now they're like, we haven't got resources for that, you know? Obviously, it's not an unending stream if
you, exactly. You know, though you wonder why they don't just, you know, make more.
I thought it was interesting, the looks on the others' faces when Aaron Doral suggested nuking the city. I mean, Sharon had a pretty stoic, that Sharon, not the Caprica, but, you know, the bad
she
Sharon.
She always does, though.
Yeah, but Six looked pretty appalled, I thought.
Well, of course.
Well, yeah. That's,
I mean, those are the two, you know, that are, you know, the...
started this whole campaign.
Essentially the human sympathizers as close as you get, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The war heroes.
Although I still think it's funny that that Caprica Six and Gaius are having, like, relationship issues, you know? They're
yeah, like, the deepening of Baltar's character is really awesome.
I still don't feel sorry for him.
I do.
Oh, man. I don't feel sorry
doesn't
for him.
Doesn't mean I like him as a person or that I think he's right or that I hope things work out for him. I don't. But, I did feel sorry for him. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, is in over his head and has made some incredibly bad mistakes, and he knows it.
And as Six pointed out, he's been wallowing in self-hatred and loathing and just, it looks like he wants to die almost. I mean,
he asked them to. He's like, why don't you just shoot me? You know, and the last time he was like, they were like, we could kill Baltar. And he's like, huh? Wait a minute. You know, now he's like, why don't you kill me? You know, that would solve the problem.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I still have trouble getting
that's him taking the easy way out.
Yeah,
again,
exactly. I mean, yeah. He's spent every occasion before the occupation to weasel himself into that position and, you know, put his people where they are. He put himself there. He made those choices, and now he's going to have to live with them or not. I still don't have any sympathy for him. Yeah, he's having a tough time. It'd be
well,
tough
I didn't
for
say,
anybody.
I think he's right. I said I feel sorry for him.
I don't feel sorry for him. Him or Jammer. No love for
I have to admit that I don't really feel sorry for Jammer.
No,
much.
No.
I kind of sympathize with his plight, but
I don't sympathize.
I feel sorry for him because I think that he meant and wanted to do the right thing, and he just, I mean, yeah, he's a bad guy because he did bad things, but I feel sorry because I think that he knows what he's done is completely wrong, and there's no backing out of it.
Isn't
now.
It so weird, though? Like, when he cut Callie's, you know, hands free and said, run to where?
Yeah, where exactly are you? I mean, she's going to go.
Didn't
there
he
safe.
See all the guys, like, turn around? They saw her running, didn't they, and started chasing
no,
her?
No, I think it was just coincidence of timing, because the bullet heads came up, and everybody saw that. I think they would have seen her if...
Yeah, run where? What, back to New Caprica? Yeah. No. Where? Is she just going to hide out in the mud? In this almost habitable planet?
Well, he knows more about their plan than we do. I mean, maybe he thought that they hadn't counted them or that they wouldn't pay attention. Once they're at the place, they don't bother checking. I don't know.
Okay, they had a list with her name on it.
Okay, all right. Yeah, you're right.
Let's see. Yep. Okay, she's gone.
Oh, let's see. She's back. Maybe she didn't get killed.
Just a moment. Wait, they can't make
these
copies.
Are machines, after all. I mean, they can count, I would think.
Well, only the one and zero, maybe.
But you can make a lot of numbers out of one.
I was pretty impressed that she got away. I mean, without...
She well, did.
And the coincidence of Chief running up and...
Oh, man, that wasn't a coincidence. That was totally planned.
What was totally planned?
You know, her, you know, the Chief showing up there beforehand, watching them arrive, finding her, realizing the problem, running down there and pushing her down at just the right time. That was totally planned. None of that was an accident. I thought it was kind of awesome how they set all that up. I thought it was kind of lame at the end of the last show when they, you know, had the gunfire, which was supposed to, you know, make us think that they were executing Roslyn and Tom Zarek.
Yeah, it was a bit of a cheap trick, but I mean, at least they went back to it, you know.
But man, they sure pulled it out. I mean,
it
was cool.
It was a short-lived cheese. you know, I mean, they've got...
Yeah, about 30 seconds before they showed all those people in the trail.
Yeah. But, well, yeah, that's true. But, I mean, even so, I mean, even if we didn't see that, but they went back and immediately addressed, you know, what it was. And really, I guess, the Cylon gun, like the Cylon bullet head guns, sound mm-hmm. different anyway. Because you could tell it was a human automatic.
Interesting.
I don't know if you guys could, but I could. I paid attention to that because I'm just that big a geek. But
no, that's cool.
Well, you know, I think Ellen is definitely in trouble, and I'm interested to see what happens. It's a big deal. I think the other obvious, really huge thing that's coming into play right now is, you know, back in the beginning, you know, in the podcast we did, the first ones during the webisodes, I was a little concerned that I thought that. That Adama would use the existence of Hera, you know, now Isis, right?
Right.
Right, Sharon's baby.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that they referred to her once as Isis and they never have again?
No, they referred to her as Isis in this one.
Did they?
Yeah.
I just missed
when
it.
Laura was talking to Anders, she's like, make sure that Isis and...
Ah, okay.
Yeah, the humans call her Isis. Nice. And her, the Cylons call her Hera.
Well, you know... I always...
Who's the same goddess, by the way, isn't it?
Sort
I mean,
of.
Is
no,
it,
it's a little different.
No, it's a little bit different, but...
I thought it was the same person, like the Greek and Roman names.
No. No. They're not.
No? Okay. They're okay. Different. I was wrong.
But they do both deal with some of the same issues. Like, you know, obviously all the gods had purposes. And the purpose of Hera and the purpose of Isis actually do overlap quite a bit. But they weren't the same person with a different name. Like, I'm trying to think of a good one, like Mars or...
Aries.
Yeah, right. Mm. You know, but anyway, I thought that Adama would expose to Sharon the existence of Hera to get her on board to help. But it turns out, course, that he got her on board by just pure leadership and trust. And of course, he lied to her.
Which is going to be betrayed.
Yeah.
When she shot out Deanna's kneecaps and said, Adama would never lie to me, I had this horrible sinking feeling.
Oh, man. He's going to pay for that. He really is.
And, you know,
Sharon has flip-flopped back and forth, different sides, good and bad, a number of times already. I mean, if that doesn't do it, I don't know what would.
Yeah.
The thing that really, it was so disappointing, too, and I guess I had even started to hope a little bit. I mean, I was surprised to find her in the uniform. At the beginning of season three, but I started to think, you know, if a Cylon can be loyal to humans, maybe this gap between the two isn't as big as you would imagine, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's getting ready to get knocked down pretty quickly.
Yeah. The problem is for whatever else he is, and maybe he's her friend and maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe she's still a military asset to him. The cold fact of it is he did lie to her. He used her like a military asset. He is keeping privileged information from her about her child. He's going to be in a world of hurt when she finds out about it, and
you
she
know what
will.
I think the problem is, I mean, when he did that, she was still considered the enemy and a thing and a military asset. Now she's part of the fleet. She's sworn in. She's wearing the uniform, the dog tags, and she said how important those were to her. And she's married to Hilo. I mean, she is a person now.
In effect,
she's part of their family now. And now, I mean...
Isn't this such a strange reversal? I mean, first she had to explain to him, essentially, why her other version, you know, was...
Hurt him.
Yeah, was willing to shoot him. And now he's going to have to explain to her why he lied to her.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
and I bet they'll make him too because Adama always gets stuck with the hard stuff.
Well, not only
his life story.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
not
because
only,
he takes responsibility for himself.
Yeah, exactly, and he's going to have a huge dilemma. Now he can play that anyway. You know, he'll play it straight and he'll tell the truth, which is going to be worse for him up front. Yeah. Well, yeah, but I mean, when outed like that and Sharon's going to ask him, you know she's going to ask him boldface with a gun in his face probably that, you know, what he did with her kid and is she still alive? And it's going to be an interesting
I don't think
episode.
It's going to be a gun. I don't think there's going to be a gun in anybody's face.
I do.
Because she may not even suspect he might come
to
her.
No, you know, it would be easier with a gun. it would be easier if she just found out and switched sides. And it's never easy for Adama. He's gonna have to face her in a room, and he's gonna be facing his own lies. He's not gonna be facing a gun, or he's not gonna be facing some other easier challenge.
He said in the miniseries, I think, wasn't it, that he didn't have room for regrets, because what he does in his line of work, you make a decision and then you live with it.
And in his case, that means you suffer with it.
Yeah, well, he's going to suffer. I still think there's going to be a gun.
Yeah?
I think she's going to have a cat. Well, think about it. I mean, when they took her baby, or they were going to try and take her baby, man, she was breaking glass with her face. I mean, no, she's going to have a huge problem.
But times have changed a little bit. Doesn't she seem like a much more deep character now than back then?
But she's also, I think that will come rushing back. There's nothing greater than a mother's love. She's going to have a problem.
Yeah. Bet you a quarter.
All right, I'll go with that.
No gun?
Well, I think you're both right. I think she is a deeper character now, but I think that she also still has the potential to, I mean, yeah.
I agree. I mean, have that potential.
You saw how she reacted. I mean, Deanna Beers only had to say a few words to her about maybe getting to hold this baby that might hypothetically be alive, and she almost, you know, changed her mind about what she was going to do.
Oh, I just had a thought. You know what's going to happen? It's going to be just like the Oracle said. That number three is going to end up with the baby, and Sharon's going to get away with the fleet, and then she's going to find out.
Well, the Oracle said also that Deanna would lose everything after she did that.
She said, and you'll lose everything you worked for
here. Yeah.
Did she say here?
Here. She said here.
Maybe.
I'm telling you, that's what's going to happen. Still. She's going to escape with... the baby's going to get left on the planet somehow.
I think Deanna probably is going to be end up being the caretaker, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I would not disagree with that, but I still think she's going
to
do some hostile.
I wonder what that's going to do to Sharon, though. Because, I mean, on one hand, that will make her... She'll be mad, but on the other hand, would she be more likely to be with her child if she, you know, betrayed them or not?
I don't know. My head's spinning around. I'm trying to put it all together.
It's a tough call. I think probably she's going to wind up knowing that and it may not even happen next episode. She may just wind up having getting them off the planet, and Deanna will escape off the planet as well with the baby, and maybe be the caretaker, like you're saying. Then later on, she's going to find out, and I bet you there's going to be some argument with the muzzle of a weapon.
I bet you she finds out pretty quick. Right after they escape and get away, she'll find out, and it'll be confronted right then and there. You watch.
Hope she's not in a flight suit with a sidearm. That's all I'm saying.
I wonder I wonder if Deanna would be willing, if she holds this baby and knows true love and everything. So far, the way the human Cylons have approached love is that it's something that's more powerful than anything else. At least that's the way Six and Sharon have talked about it. And I wonder if when Deanna holds that baby and knows love, like the Oracle said, if she'd be willing to betray her own people for something like that.
I don't know.
That's a good question, too, because all the Cylons who've quote-unquote experienced love, I'm talking about the emotional kind, they have completely just separated from all the Cylon plans and all the Cylon ideas. And I mean, they made an entire trip out there to try and live in peace with them. So I would say, yeah, it's going to affect her, but Deanna seems to be the more manipulative, and not like Six manipulative, but like strategic manipulative, if that makes any sense.
Totally. Totally. I see where you're going.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The concept that, I mean, it's, maybe controlling is a better word.
Yeah.
I think
that's
it.
Yeah. She seems to be a lot more controlling.
Six makes people want to do what she wants them to do.
Yeah.
Deanna makes them do it.
Exactly. I think.
Yeah, well put.
Yeah, exactly. What he said. I think she'll use it as leverage. Whether she believes it or wants to keep it or switches sides, I think the baby will become big leverage for something.
You know, when you talk about the Cylons who have experienced love have become these kind of outsiders, but what about Leoben? I mean,
that is not love. That is a stalker.
Well, I agree in my definition too. That's a stalker. But I mean, we don't know that he isn't really in love.
True.
Does the love have to be mutual? You
but
know
then
I'm
again,
saying?
He might be an outsider too, because we don't see him, and he's all in the little shack, and he's not with the group.
True.
And
yeah,
no,
there
know.
Was an interesting comment that just posted today, and forgive me for not remembering the name of the person who posted it. But go after you listen to this, go look at galacticawatercooler.com on the podcast.
Or while you're listening to this.
Yeah, on podcast number 9, I believe it was, and there was a great comment on there with someone who said, maybe the reason that we didn't see Leoben in the Cylon caucus, you know, was in the last episode, the premiere, was because it would have diluted his performance with Starbuck. We see him with Starbuck, and he's trying so hard to get Starbuck to love him. And if we saw him just casually, like, walking around and shooting the bull and sitting there going, yeah, we should kill him, we should not kill him in the caucus, you know, it wouldn't have, you know, it would have really distracted us from that. So the comment was essentially meant to say, hey, maybe it's not really meaningful otherwise that he wasn't in the caucus. Maybe he's just, you know, it was an editorial decision or something to try to strengthen that performance.
Yeah, I could see that. That's a good point. And maybe he's gone for the reason that the other, you know, the Cylons that we haven't discovered yet were gone. Maybe they have some other plan they're trying to work on while these ones are meeting.
True. And you know, it could be that the service or the service, the roles that like the Leoben and the others that we don't see yet have are more, I guess, like you get
personal
the,
in nature.
Well, they're the escort Cylons. No, like when we see every time we see Aaron, he's more of an administrator and kind of a that kind of thing. A six is a
anal.
Six is a combat unit sort of, and a seductress. She's kind of hardcore.
Right, Sharon's the sleeper.
Yeah,
agent.
Exactly. You know, maybe he's like the wigged out, you know, live in a shack in the mountains, kind of assassin, freak show.
You know, maybe
type.
He's an oracle. I mean, he's talked about a number of times, you know, he said that he sees the future. You know, there's a lot of that kind of thing in Battlestar Galactica. We had the oracle, this crazy, where have I seen her before?
Oh, I know her from
the
somewhere.
Woman who played the
yeah.
oracle?
Yeah.
Do you get? I don't know. No, I don't know.
Oh,
I was just thinking
familiar.
It makes sense to have an oracle. I mean, the oracle at Delphi, the Delphi museums where they got the arrow of Apollo, you know, I mean.
The Usenet oracle.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, but it all ties in. I mean, it's, I think it's very cool, but not at all surprising that we end up having an oracle.
Yeah, but you know, the thing you have to remember is that in Battlestar Galactica, religion is real. I mean, regardless of what you may believe personally here in the real world.
I want to know what is in that Kamala root. My goodness. She every time she takes a little lick of the Kamala, she can tell the future. I'm like, does that work for anybody?
Yeah.
Like, can just anyone lick Kamala off their palm and be like, ah, you know, you're going to get a free pizza tomorrow or something.
We're going to be liberated, you know.
And, you know, what does she get from this? She gets a message to give to a Cylon that will hurt everybody. That's great.
You know what I thought was interesting is, I'm sorry.
And she said, your God spoke to me.
Yeah,
apparently, like when you take the Kamala route, you don't just necessarily get visions from your own God. You get visions from, you know, whatever God happens to have a message today.
Well, that's
they
what
pass it on.
I was thinking that was really interesting because if she is right, if that oracle is correct and that we can regard everything she says as true, which I don't know that's the case, but assuming that she's right, then there really are multiple gods. And the Cylon God is either one of them or something else.
Interesting.
You know, there was an excellent comment on the site, and I didn't look it up either. I think it was Roy. But anyway, there was a comment on the site today, and it was talking about that the Cylon God might actually be a human. And
I didn't see that.
Oh yeah,
I'm going to go look at
that
right
That's
away.
Awesome.
The Cylon God might actually be a human. That spawn, like that's how they got the whole a religion thing, and that's how they came to look more like human because they created themselves in their God's image, which was a human, and he's the one giving them their direction and their, you know, overall flow, and that's where they're coming from. So, you know, it could have been as simple as their God somehow, you know, gave them this huge mission, and it was actually a person in one way, shape, or form.
I wonder if it turned out something weird, something like circular, because there's something circular about the philosophy or the religion already when they say all of this has happened before, all of it will happen
again.
Which
is fascinating to me.
Yeah, and I wonder if, you know, someone like what if Baltar's their god?
I was thinking that too.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be so appropriate considering his role in the original series.
Yeah. Well,
like a disaffected human who walked away from the religion and started his own kind of deal. And
what if he was their god and he didn't know it? What if Six was the first one and she was, you know, well, obviously she wasn't. She was the sixth one, right? But what if Six was created to go and spend time with him, and in spending time with him, it seems kind of far out, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know. I had read somewhere, and I wish I could remember now because I've been reading so much. It might have been on Ron Moore's blog, but I'm not certain, so don't hold me to it. But I read somewhere that the idea that Six was sort of a guardian angel to Baltar, and I had never really thought of her that way. But if indeed he is, she keeps telling him how, you know, in the episodes in season 2.5 when they first go down to Cobol, right?
Right.
And they're seeing the baby's crib and everything, and she's telling him, you know, you are so important to this, and you're going to be the father. And it seems like she's not grooming him, but sort of giving him the information that he needs to know at the time to let him know how important he is so he doesn't give up on surviving. Make sure he lives. Make sure he makes it. You know.
Are we to assume, by the way, that Baltar is not aware that Hera is alive?
Oh, I think we're specifically... That was specifically kept from him.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah. No, I think they actually... Because you saw the people in the room, and one of them was not Baltar, because I think they... didn't right before they had the little conference with... what's her name? Who got the baby? And
oh, yeah, Maya.
Maya. When they had Maya, right before that, they told Gaius that they killed the baby specifically.
Yeah,
they
but
told
I mean,
him.
Are we to assume then that when he became president, he did not become privy to those facts?
All the rest of the people were in the resistance, so yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, and also, I mean, even if we didn't have that,
there was
scene,
a year in there. I mean, I didn't mean to interrupt, but there was a year where he was the president and things were normal.
If he knew, Six would know.
Yeah,
yeah. So I guess not. He doesn't know.
And even if we didn't have that scene that showed them keeping it from him, I don't think that Laura Roslin would have allowed that information, because she knew from being on her deathbed in Epiphanies, the episode
right.
Epiphanies, she
sure.
remembered him with Six. So after she came back to health and everything and then made the decision about what they were going to do with the baby, there's no way she would have let him know.
Yeah, I would. I'm going to have to go with Audra on that one. I think that's probably the case. He doesn't know. Neither does Six. The only one who knows is the number three, that one specific number three. And then through the Oracle and that kind of thing, she's going to go get that kid. But the Oracle is actually kind of fascinating, because they, you know, every time they do the whole religion thing, especially with the, you know, it's happened before, it's happened again. I thought another theory, which I was reading somewhere, and I cannot remember where it is. It might have actually been the blog. But another theory was that, you know, they talk about, at least in one of the episodes, and I don't remember which one it was either, but they talk about that everybody has a role to play, and the roles are very defined.
Oh, that comes up in a number of season one episodes.
Yeah,
season two episodes.
I mean, this could be like the Oracle has a bunch of roles, and maybe this number three who has the Hera Isis is a role that's written in the scriptures and everything. It's like, okay, this is you, you know, this is your role. You're going to be, you know, the one who takes the first hybrid, and you're going to, you know, lead us into the new future and whatever.
You know, what was so confusing was and I obviously need to go back on the TiVo and watch it again, but the Oracle says, let's see, when Deanna walks in, Deanna says, your gods don't exist. There's only one God, and that's God, you know? And the Oracle says something like, you don't really believe that anymore, do you? And then she says, the Oracle says later, I have a message from your God. Okay. Are we saying they both exist? Or are we saying that...
Yeah, it sounded like that.
Yeah. And it might have been, you know, I took it as, and maybe this is the case, I'm not exactly sure how I feel about it yet, but I took it as one of the things it could have meant is, you know, it was really Zeus who was telling me, but, you know, in order to get you to listen, I'm gonna tell you this way so that you'll stay here. You know?
I didn't get the impression that the Oracle was deceiving her in any way, though.
I don't think much is deceiving her, but as you know, like an Oracle's job is to make you follow a path. That's basically what an Oracle does.
Says the Matrix fan.
Exactly. There's a difference between knowing the path and walking. Yeah, I mean,
have a cookie, Dana.
I promise. By the time you were done, yeah.
She referred to Zeus separately from that, and then I mean, I think she would have said Zeus again rather than pretending that Zeus was someone.
I think
else.
You got a good thing going there, Sean, but I'm not sure I can totally buy it, and I think that's why it's like
I don't know. I think that's the. She'll tell you what you need to hear to get you where you're going. I think that's
so. You see the Oracle, and I'm not making fun of you. You do see the Oracle, kind of like the one in the Matrix, where she's not just telling you the future; she's telling you something to get you to do something to make it the future.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I think. I think that's what oracles do. I think historically, if you look at any kind of oracle, even the Oracle at Delphi, I mean, they'd listen to what you asked for, you know, and then come right around and tell you what they thought you needed to hear or were trying to hear or anything like that. I mean, that's what oracles do personally.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's a good argument. I'm buying it. You're selling me.
I was going to ask something and now I'm just like, wow. Yeah, that really makes sense.
I mean, that's, and you know, sorry, I didn't mean to kill stuff or anything like
that.
Oh no,
that's okay.
But awesome. That's kind of what oracles do. They push you towards a path one way or the other. Either defined by nature or, you know, a sum of all the things that they know, and then they try and tell you what they think it's going to work to make you go.
And, you know,
direction.
You make a good argument, too, that it could totally be an understanding of the roles in the story, and that she's pushing Deanna to play a particular role.
Right. That's kind of the take I spun on it, but, you know.
Interesting.
I've been wrong in the Battlestar storyline before, so
you know, I was thinking back what we were saying. If Gaius or someone turned out to be the god and didn't know it, you know, before the initial attacks on the colonies, when he was dating Six and she was at his glass house, and she would even tell him then about God's love. Remember, because he'd get all frustrated and
yeah,
oh, not
true.
This again. So. I don't know if that's an argument against it or not, or maybe just it would be really weird if maybe she doesn't know.
Yeah. See,
I don't know.
And that's the whole fun of it, you know, is we don't know. We don't know if the Cylon God is, and the 12 gods is all the same thing. We're just going in a circle and this is all.
It's funny. Not only do we not know whether or not the Cylon gods and the Cylon god and the human gods are the same. We don't even know that they have a plan anymore. I always thought it would be funny if like in this episode, they had just removed the little one-liner at the beginning and said, they have a plan.
They
or just
have a plan.
Scratched
it's just
out.
Gone.
Just, it was like,
they're hosed. <Yeah.
laughs> They have a plan. They have plans. They think. Maybe.
They have Congress. Yeah.
Wasn't that great when... They're all there disagreeing and wandering around.
See what they've done to us?
Yeah, Deanna, yeah. See what they've done to us? And I was like, oh, yeah, dissent among the ranks. That's the only way. I think that is the main way that they're going to defeat the Cylons. Remember we were talking about, you know, how are they going to defeat this enemy that's so much more powerful and strong than they are, you know? And here we are, and Deanna's like, man, they got us all disagreeing with each other. And I'm like, that's it? That's the key?
Weren't you the same person who a couple podcasts ago said all you need is love and they're all gonna love's gonna save all of them and that's what's gonna pull them out of the tailspin?
Did I say that?
I'm pretty sure it's something.
I don't remember that.
I think it was something along those lines.
Obviously, it's on the website for posterity, so we can all go
sure
back and listen now. But
it might have been something like that. I don't remember saying the exact phrase.
All
you
need
is
love.
Well, you know, that I'm just saying.
And
I'm
flowers.
Summing up quickly. And flowers, that's right. Yeah.
And kitties.
It's like the Partridge Family or something. It's
what was that? Sound of Music song, you know, Raindrops on Roses, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Wow, I didn't even remember that one. That's pretty sharp.
But, you know, I don't know if just disagreeing is going to do it. I think it's going to, because they're about to I mean, all they'd have to do is leave that planet and start chasing them again, and Dissension's going to go away because the fleet will come back and they'll get the normal order. They'll box up the ones that disagree, or they'll be off in some kind of little rebel unit or something like that. And
well, then, I think the disagreement goes way beyond that. I mean, just because it's not just simple disagreement. It's what we were saying last time about, you know, you have Cylons who are starting to act like individuals when everyone else is conforming. Now more and more Cylons are starting to come out as individuals. You had the celebrities, the war heroes. Now people disagreeing with their different body types or whatever you want
to
call them.
You know, here's something that you really have to consider. Who knows? Who among the Colonials actually know that the Cylons don't really have a plan anymore?
Gaius.
Baltar. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, nobody else knows. Yeah, Geta, right.
Yeah.
Geta knows. And I guess Geta will tell them afterward, which will make things interesting. Oh, we got to talk here for a minute about the trailer.
Geta knows,
at the
everybody
end.
Knows. Yeah.
You know, of course, we were on the TiVo button 2 seconds after the end of the trailer, backing it up. We watched it four
the
times.
Next time
yeah.
scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. And lots of big stuff there. I mean, first of all...
yeah, this is not a spoiler, by the way. It was in the trailer.
First of all, we see, we see the scene where Adama is hollering about Lee. Damn it, Lee, you know?
Yeah.
And we see on the Dreadus, right, two Bay Stars with
an enemy
raider,
fighter between them,
and then two Vipers.
Two Vipers, right. And then we see an explosion, which is a Bay Star.
Well, first we see an explosion on Adama's
own bridge,
and he kind of flies backward, and then we see a Bay Star exploding immediately after.
Right.
Yeah, I'm still sticking with my theory that he's going to sacrifice the Pegasus or that way.
Sean came out of his chair. It was awesome. Sean's like, right up. Sean's like, I told you the Pegasus was going to get rammed into something.
I told you.
It was going to happen. You know, it was awesome. And I think you may be right. The thing that's concerning, that sort of concerns me, though, is that, I mean, we saw the explosion on the bridge. Now, they've obviously done a lot of red herring work with us in the past.
Oh, sure.
So.
Sure.
Especially
sure.
in trailers. It's easy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think he's going to dump everybody else off on a fleet. You know, the fleet's going to be left, you know, at whatever coordinates it is. And Lee's going to jump back with a skeleton crew and go help Dad. I mean, because obviously, because they said, you know, two Bay Stars have just jumped into orbit. So, yeah.
No, they said two
Battle Stars.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously he's coming back, but I think that's what he's going to do. He's going to come in like on the White Horse, no pun intended, and get down on some.
That's awesome. On a horse.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
You can get down on some Cylon beat down. So, I mean, he's going to get on.
And something else in the trailer that did not look like a red herring, it's hard to tell, but we see Geta right?
That
pointing
was
a gun
awesome.
At
no, it was a
head.
Knife. I thought it was a knife.
No, it was a gun.
It was a gun?
Yeah,
it was a gun. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Shoved it up under his chin. That was awesome.
Yeah, and Gaius says, the human race
dies
with
me.
With me.
Yeah, which I take it to mean like he can control whatever, or he will have some kind of say over the nuclear thing. I thought that's what that would mean.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I could see that. Yeah, because I didn't know what
somehow,
he meant by that.
Somehow
but.
That's the only connection I could make. Because
I can't help but think it's going to be some kind of crazy twist, though, where he's actually trying to prevent the nuclear weapon from going off, and Geta is on him, and he's...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It'll be something like that.
Right.
Something like that. I don't know what, but I don't know. I always like Geta.
I always like Geta too. I have to admit, I was a little ticked at him when he uncovered the election mistake.
I liked him until that point, and I don't really like him a lot. If he were like a guy and I was a guy, I wouldn't like him.
But
I like his character. His character certainly brings a lot to the series, and the actor does a great job with it as well. But
I like his character. I mean,
you do?
Yeah, I mean, even though
who's so straight-laced that he can't use his own judgment.
But see, I disagree about that. I think,
really?
I mean, and we talked about that a little bit outside the podcast, but I think that he is using his own judgment when he has been sending secret messages to the Resistance. And I know you were saying that you thought that was sort of by a book of a different sorts, but I think that that is him making his own decision. And I think that he is maybe evolved a little bit as a character. I think he used to be very straight-laced and wouldn't break out of the rules. And I think that the experience on New Caprica has maybe changed him.
I don't know, man. You know, Gata's the kind of guy who would save Baltar because he's the president. And then you know, wait for something to be done with him afterward. I have to admit, I would not.
I'd be the one who shoots him, personally.
Yeah, I would like to think I'm not, but I probably would be. I'm like Ty.
I think maybe Gata always tries to do the right thing. I guess you could say Jammer does too, but I think Gata always tries to do the right thing, but he's not.
Yeah, we'll take him all out and execute him. It'll be the right thing.
But I think he's somewhat short-sighted. Like, you know, a truly magnificent and great leader like Adama. Yeah, he makes mistakes, but I think he makes them
for the right reason.
Right, and even Lee is this way. He's like his father. Do you remember when Lee, in the Black Market episode, shot the leader of the Black Market, just killed him? And, I mean, that was wrong. He just murdered a guy in cold blood, you know? But, you know, Lee was thinking strategically all the way down the line. He saw it like in a chess game. He saw all the way down to checkmate when he did that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Gata lacks. He tries to do the right thing, but he doesn't look as far ahead.
He lacks vision.
I agree, but if Gata is short-sighted, then Jammer must be, like, so incredibly myopic that he can't...
Jammer's like, is this a pawn? Yeah. How does a pawn move again?
Exactly. What game are we playing?
Checkers,
exactly.
Yeah, I don't... Gata, at least, I can see where he's coming from. I don't agree with him a lot of the time. I think that he should have kept his mouth shut with the election. I think he tries to do what he knows is right, or he tries to be like Adama, but like...
I think Audra hit the nail on the head. Yeah, but he just doesn't...
He lacks vision. He doesn't understand... He can't look three moves ahead. Jammer cannot look above his own comfort, I think, really. He's close to guys in that way. He's not nearly as smart. He's not nearly as important. And the decisions he makes are jackass. However, he's a lot like guys in that kind of weaselly, I think I want to be okay type of thing. He takes the easy way out most of the time. I think they differ a lot, Jammer and Gata. But the Gata at least tries to do, he has backbone, you know?
I guess I can't argue with that. He does. He applies it.
Yeah.
In some incredibly stupid ways sometimes. But he does have backbone,
you know, which you can't say for Jammer. Jammer will go with whatever pressure is pushing on him.
Yeah, Jammer's just a very weak character. Yeah. He's not as egotistical, like you were saying, you know, Baltar is, but still, same result.
Yeah, you push on Jammer, he's gonna lean. You know, you push on Gata, it's not gonna get you anywhere. Now he may make a stupid decision, but it's not gonna get you anywhere. You know?
Hey, you know, one thing we didn't talk about much tonight was Starbuck and her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I do want to talk about that. I mean,
Casey, right?
Her daughter, Casey. Now, I was so waiting. I mean, first of all, that little girl was quiet. She didn't say a single thing in that entire scene.
I guess they didn't want to pray.
Oh, they didn't want to pay her for the speaking role.
God, we got to pay her an extra $1,000 if she says anything.
Just nod.
Just make her wiggle and smile. Yeah.
Grab her hand. It'll be fine.
Well, first of all, no residuals for you, little Casey.
This is called syndication, sweetheart. You ain't doing nothing.
Well, first of all, I thought it was really kind of eerie that this little girl didn't say a single word. I mean, kids that age, you know, at least they're going to murmur or say things,
but did
you know?
How about when, didn't they kind of address that when Starbuck said, you don't understand a word I'm saying, do you?
Yeah, but, you know, before Starbuck said that, I was waiting, since that little girl was so quiet, I was waiting for her to say something like, Daddy hit my head or something, you know?
Daddy hits me.
You know, and like tell the truth about, you know, because I'm guessing that, I don't know for sure, but I suspect that Leo Ben is the one who, you know, knocked her on the head so that Starbuck would feel sorry for her. But because, you know, she's like, oh, that doesn't look so bad. And you're like, yeah, it wasn't that bad. He probably put some ketchup
Casey's
on her head.
Casey's incredibly
and then,
cute. I'm sorry. Yeah. I just had to say that.
She's cute.
Man, that was awesome. Her little hair underneath the bandage. She's like, sorry.
It was cute.
What a cute kid.
Yeah. Perfect casting and the connection between her and Starbuck.
I think that connection, it goes back to sort of like what you were saying, and I think that podcaster too, Audra, was that, you know, Starbuck had a rough childhood. I think that the child being hurt and the parents arguing, quote-unquote parents arguing, hit home with Starbuck more than she could possibly reason, you know.
That's a good point.
That, you know, the Starbuck had the thought, or at least this is the way I took it, but that Starbuck had the thought of a child seeing grown-ups argue and say
that's
hurtful
right. things
that to
each
other.
That was the first thing that bothered her, was explaining
insightful.
To Casey.
That bothered her on a level. And then the child got hurt under her watch, which I'm sure she swore to herself if you know, that kind of situation.
She said, I'm not
going to
be that kind of parent.
I'm not
going to
be that kind
of
mom. Yeah. And the first thing, she was a mom for 5 minutes and her kid got hurt, you know?
You know, I was just thinking in the earlier episodes that we had talked about that, other than the doctor, Simon, in the farm, mentioning that she had these broken bones and asking her about that, the only other time we hear about Starbuck's background, and we expanded on it a little bit in one of the earlier podcasts, was when the episode where she's having Leoben tortured.
Yeah.
And he says something about, indicates that she had some kind of, I don't know, abusive or psychologically damaging past, probably childhood, and said something about, you're always trying to be something in her eyes. And I kind of speculated that it might be her mother, that she might have had some kind of significant relationship
with her mother.
Mm-hmm. Being abusive or just something going on with her mom. And if that's the case, then if Starbuck sees herself as, you know, being a bad mom,
yeah,
again, it just adds to what you're saying.
That would hurt, you know. I mean, that would be something I would think that would be mortifying to her, you know, as far as, you know, okay, I've been a mom for 5 minutes and my kid's already witnessed violence. She's gotten hurt, you know, and I think that's where the whole, you know, grown-ups do things that just don't make any sense. And, you know, it's not your fault and, you know, it's not you. I think that's kind of where, because it sounds like she was sort of saying things that would have made her feel better to hear.
Totally.
Saying what she needed to hear.
Yeah. Totally. You know, when she was a kid that never got said to her or something like that.
I wonder if this situation, since Leoben is the first one who, if he's sort of an oracle figure or whatever and knew that about her, if he didn't set it up that way.
Oh, I think he totally did, because he told her, you know, I'm going to show you how precious life is. I'm going to show you, you know, this and that. You know,
yeah, he sort of did, didn't he?
Yeah, he kind of
said
that
in the old episode?
No, he said that
in the season premiere, I think. Yeah, I mean, he said, you know, I've decided to show you what life really means, you know.
Then he introduces her to Casey.
Right, and he already, like you said, he already had insight into her background and that kind of thing. I think he planned this whole thing. I mean, and he's obviously messing with her head and doing a pretty good job. I just wonder how, she's obviously never going to love him. You know, she's chosen who she wants to love. And
do you think she's
going to
take the baby with her when she flees?
Oh, yeah. I think she's going to take the baby. And because that would present a huge problem to Anders. Because Anders is going to be, she's got a messed up, more than a messed up head than she already had when she left him. now she's conflicted and she's got this silent baby who, Anders,
I think Anders will be okay with that.
Anders, I think, will be okay with it eventually. But I think he's going to have some problems with her. Not the baby.
I don't know, man. I think
her.
Anders is going to be fine with that.
He'll be fine.
I think that
the
problem's going to be in the fleet when she shows up with her half Cylon baby.
Yeah,
that's pretty scary.
See, that's like, not again.
Yeah, oh, great.
Yeah,
I mean, actually, I think that it might be just as much conflict, at least for Starbuck, if Leoben kept Casey.
Well, yeah.
If Starbuck left and you know.
Well, because she had that problem when she left Anders, you know, and that was somebody she loved. So if she's come to love she's come to love Casey, she has to leave her. That might be another problem for her. So she might be broken by the time she gets to Anders either way, either with a kid or without a kid.
I think Anders is going to be okay with that, though. Remember, I mean, these people have been through a lot. He hasn't seen her in 4 months. He just cares about her. I think he's just going to want to see her. I mean, it may become a problem eventually.
That's what I'm saying. It's going to become a problem eventually.
Yeah, I could see that.
Immediately, nothing's going to matter. You know?
A lot of parental relationships, parent and child relationships in the series. I mean, you have a lot of fathers and sons and a lot of mothers and daughters. You have Sharon and Hera/Isis. You have Starbuck now and Casey. You have the chief and his son. You have Adama and his son. You have Hilo. I'm sorry.
That's backwards.
Right. You're right. But still.
Yeah. And you know, you have the president and Billy. Oh, wait.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
Still
saying.
It's interesting.
Billy back. No, don't bring Billy back.
Bring Billy back.
Just don't bring Billy back. That's all.
Okay, Sorry about that. I didn't mean to interrupt. I interrupted you. You were saying something, Audra. Very cool. And
no, I just thought it was really neat the way the show is emphasizing, and maybe for greater reasons than we know right now, but a lot about parents and their kids.
Because of the emotional you know, attachment to that that we have. I mean,
but you could do that just as well with siblings or with lovers. Or
I think the whole father daughter or not father daughter, but the whole, you know, parental child thing is an illustration of a human thing. I think that's kind
of
what they're trying
to
do.
It's one of the cores of what
makes
us human.
It's one of the core that makes us human. So they would try and emphasize that, I would think.
True. And also they might be trying to draw parallels between, you know, the Cylons being the children of the humans and
exactly,
us being children of the gods or God or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is especially on the religion side, when you start looking at that, is based on a parental type, you know, structure. So I would think that that's very important to the whole thing.
Yeah, if the Cylon religion with single God, I mean, it sounds a lot like Christianity. We don't know that it has anything to do with Christianity.
Might be Baltarianity.
Yeah, Baltarianity. Yeah. But if it is anything like it, then that's a patriarchal system, just like you said.
Yeah.
Father, son,
you know, that kind of. So I don't know where they're going with it, and hopefully they'll share a little bit more with us. But every time.
But not a lot.
Yeah, but not a lot. I don't want all of it. Even if you showed me a piece of paper with it all on it, you know, all the answers, I still wouldn't want to read it yet. I want to see the rest of the story.
You know, something else real quick, this is just off topic, but something small that adds to what we've been wondering about. In this episode, Exodus, Brother Cavill is complaining about every time he gets downloaded into a new body, it's less and less comfortable. He's getting these bad headaches, and it's...
Yeah, like, it used to be just a little headache. Now it's like a blinding flash of light.
I wonder if it's not like a copy that as it gets copied over and over, it gets less true to the original.
I think it's more like it's, you're getting more, like it's more pain, it's more emotion, it's more life, it's more data. And it's just the more you get, the more it hurts.
Actually, you know? I don't think they were talking about their feelings in the new body. I think they were talking about the feeling of being killed. And that would actually go along with what Sharon said about the Raiders, that dying is a painful experience. I don't think that they were carrying new pains into their new body. I think that he said the first time it was like a headache, like he just died, and the second time so on, and the last one was blinding pain, and he was writhing in the on the ground in pain, and he was, it actually came in on the discussion where he was talking about how the gunny had looked at him and said, I hope it hurts for a long time before you get back to Download City, you know. And
is Gunny, is that a nickname or?
Gun, it's for a gunnery sergeant.
Yeah, gunner. Yeah, it's a nickname for a rank.
Master gunner.
Oh, right.
Like what she's calling her LT, that's lieutenant.
Yeah. And I think that dying was just a bad experience for him, and that's what he was talking about.
Maybe I was reading into it then, because I thought he was talking about...
I thought he was talking about being reloaded.
I did too at first.
Yeah, adjusting into
the new
body. No,
I totally did too at first.
Because if he got shot in the stomach, why would he have a pain in his head? That was the thing he chose to complain about.
True. True.
Well, when he cut his artery open with the skin, and that was freaky, by the way, when he's like,
oh
I crawled over and used a spent shell casing to cut my
carotid artery.
Yeah. He's like, skin's a lot tougher than you think. You know, but
that guy, still creeps me out.
I still like him.
I still like
him.
Brother
Cavill.
Brother Cavill's cool.
Ugh.
But no, I'm going to stick with, I think it's the part where they reload them and he's actually getting downloaded. I think that's the part that hurts him. You know, because every time they get, you know, because he says, you know, three times, you know, I think he's talking about three times.
I think when you go back and look, I could be wrong here, but I'm almost certain he was talking about dying. I don't think, and again, like I said, that also goes back to what Sharon had said about the Raiders, that dying is a painful experience and that they have that experience over and over again, and eventually it makes them hateful. And I think that's what was happening with him. It's making him hateful, you know?
That's right, when she was talking about Scar.
Yeah. Well, and it could be that when she was talking about, well, I don't know.
You're right. I mean, it could have been either way, but I totally respect that, because at first that's exactly what I thought, and then I kind of changed my mind.
I'll have to go back and look.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not solid either. So
I'm going to go back and watch it, but for now I'm going to still stick with the idea that it has to do with getting into the new body, just because of what Six was saying, the most recently incarnated Six was saying to Deanna about being awkward and, you know, feeling like even though it was the same body, it wasn't. And I think that with that theory, that there's an interesting line that we could follow to an interesting conclusion. I don't know what it is, but something about if the copies get less and less like the original, could there be some flaw? Or like in human genetics, I mean...
Like degradation?
Yeah, like a degradation in the or in the genome or whatever, or even in human genetics, certain things get copied or whatever.
The Alabama Cylons. Yeah, yeah. Inbreeding.
But there can be mutations, you know, and I wonder if that could be a problem. If they get downloaded and reincarnated so many times.
I think
maybe you only have 9 lives, you know, I don't know.
I think that in the story you can have the same effect from a social perspective instead of a science perspective. Is that, you know, if you consider that every time they're killed in some way, they experience the pain of dying, and it's worse for them each time, and it makes them hateful and more hateful and resentful, and eventually they become less valuable people because they're so hateful. And you know, if you think about it, throughout the canon so far in Battlestar Galactica, whenever there's been an option of taking something from a science standpoint or taking something from a social standpoint, they'll always take the social standpoint, you know,
it's more interesting.
Yeah. Which makes me think, I mean,
I don't know
what I think.
Cause when Boomer woke up in the thing and she's waking up and they've got number 3 or Deanna sitting there next to her, and she's waking up and her eyes are fluttering and she's got her eyes rolling in the back of her head. She's like, just, it's okay. I know it hurts. Step past the pain. And I think that's when she was getting reloaded. I think that's when it hurts.
Oh, that's right.
Cause you see that and she's obviously hurting bad, you know, and she's shuddering and convulsing and everything. I think it hurts. I think that it's the dying hurts too, but I think it's the whole process. When Boomer says, you know, he's died many times and been brought back, I think, you know, and dying is a painful experience. I think not only is dying a painful experience, but the whole rebirthing thing is bad.
It would make sense that birth is a painful experience. I mean, maybe for humans, it's the mother who goes through the pain, but it would make sense that if they're being born, that it would be painful. Stuff like that, stuff of that kind of magnitude in life, no matter what it is usually painful.
I can't help it.
Gasping for breath over there.
I had this picture of this big tub of goo with like scar coming out of it.
push.
You know, like
there's like a big scar with a little scar coming out of the bottom.
they show these, you know, obviously.
I see his wing.
Here they are. The first tub of goo we see, of course, has 6 in it, and then we have, you know, so we get, you know, Trisha Helfer and we get Grace Park, you know, writhing, you know, under this
naked in the
and then I picture Scar, you know, Scar like writhing in this,
got a little skid job and a scuba suit going push.
His wings are chained to the side of the tub. Push through the pain, Scar.
It's okay.
Exactly.
They call him Scar too.
So that's why I was laughing. I couldn't help. Sorry. Hey, you know, one last little bit here. I have to pull my standard production design discussion that everybody seems to hear anyway in this room, seems to hate.
Rounded chair warning, folks. Rounded chair warning.
Yes. Neat post from someone who says, hey, I wish I had it to read here, but definitely check out the blog and check out this post. Someone says, hey, isn't that the greatest bathroom ever? You know, when Starbuck walks in and the light comes on and then she leaves and the light goes off, you know, what a great idea.
Yeah. I thought the best bathroom ever was the one on Cloud 9 that Lee and Ellen Tai went into. That was pretty nice.
Yeah. Nightclubs, I guess, on spaceships are clean. I mean, most of the nightclub bathrooms I've seen have been pretty scary. But anyway.
And they have their own escape ratch and everything.
Yeah, what do you know? You know? Yeah.
But they had automated stuff when in this past episode that we just watched tonight, Sharon walks into the room and says, you know, drawer or whatever, and it pops open. I mean, yeah.
You know, I cool. The thing is, though.
Maybe there are guts inside the drawers in there.
Little bitty guts. But so anyway, that was one that came up and it was kind of interesting. And then one little thing that I couldn't help but notice, you notice early on in most of the like when they would hand documents down, when Gata, I suppose, would hand documents down that were copies of documents from the Cylons, the corners were not cut on the documents.
No, they
really
were not.
And then
did you
notice that the last one, the list that they gave,
that's right, the corners were,
the corners were
not
cut.
Oh, they were cut.
Yeah.
Yes, they were.
The list that
the chief had, that
exactly,
that he was looking at Callie's,
and saw Callie's
name on
on
the list, the corners were cut.
Corners were cut.
What
on
does
it
that mean?
Well, I don't know, but I'm guessing that it originated somewhere in the human side of things, maybe, because like all the papers they carry around are cut, and the stuff you see the Cylons are not.
Oh, like, and, right. like the collaborators cut the corners and the Cylons don't.
Yeah, or something like that. I don't yeah. know. All I know is that I was surprised because, you know me, I noticed garbage like that.
Or they
like
use that pre-cut paper.
Whatever.
Anyway. We don't have Cylon paper. We only have human paper.
It's Gata. He's got like a whole ream of the pre-cut, you know.
We're going to use
dot
our
matrix paper.
Yeah.
All connected.
You know what the secret really is to human happiness is cut toilet paper.
Cut the corners off the toilet paper.
Yeah. I mean, it's that square toilet paper. It's just rubbing them the wrong way. I'm telling
you. Oh, sorry. Oh, come on. I'm normally the one who does the yuckers.
Yeah, well, you know. So anyway, that occurred to me as well, that all of a sudden they didn't. I just want to emphasize, too, that I was right about the chairs. The chairs on Galactica are cut. And
that's
the ones
true.
In
We're
the...
F-worthy.
Yeah, so anyway... I think these things are not entirely by accident, though I suspect the paper one might have been. But I don't know. I mean, why?
Well, I don't think we've noticed any errors in the production design and the sets and the props and the continuity. I think the only thing even remotely close to an error that we found in the series at all was when, and someone posted on the blog a comment asking about that, when, what's her name, the sixth model who shows up. Not Gina, but the one before her, and Gaius mistakes her for the one.
Right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she's like the newspaper person or whatever.
Right.
And then she disappears, and then we never hear from her again. That's the only thing close to maybe
That's
a problem.
That's not an error.
Well, no, not an error, but a problem that went unresolved, I guess, you know, that seemed out of...
Oh, I thought
sync.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, the whole...
Yeah.
You mean you could see her? Yes, she's standing right next to you. You know that Adama thing?
That was awesome.
Yes, she's standing right next to you. You know, that was... And then she just escapes the same way she came, and I don't know. That was the best kind of...
Are you there, Baltar?
Yeah.
Baltar?
Baltar.
This is God, Baltar.
Stop
playing
with
yourself.
It is God. That's pretty funny. And on that lovely note, I guess I'll end both the incredibly boring segment of production design from Chuck and the podcast, which has run a little long this time. I hope you'll forgive us. A couple of things you should know. If you'd like to give us a call, the number again is 214-296-9229. That's 214-296-9229. You can also check out our website at galacticawatercooler.com. Again, there are some pretty cool blog posts there, but what you really want to do is drill down and look at some of the comments. A lot of the things you heard us discussing tonight, maybe badly, you can go and check out the wonderful original comments. And of course, we'd love to hear from you.
Drill down like your brother Cavill.
Oh, man.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And on that note, we will see you most likely next Friday if we, again, receive the kind of volume of comments and calls that we did last time. We may well put out a podcast midweek, but otherwise we'll see you on Friday.